I was in a really dark place. I didn't know if I wanted to go home. I didn't know if I wanted to stay. I had just had a kid. It was rough.
Welcome to Willing to Fail. I'm your host, Peyton Bennett, as usual. And today we have a very special guest I'm very excited to talk to. He, despite being a two-star recruit out of high school and getting no D1 scholarship offers, going undrafted, he played 9 seasons in the NFL, was a 3-time Super Bowl champ. With no further ado, LeGarrette Blount, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me, man. Thanks a lot, boss. It's an honor to be here with you.
No, the honor is all mine. Thank you. So, like, the whole gist of the show is just I want to help inspire people to go through, not be scared to fail, and get out of their own way and know that every journey there's going to be ups and downs. And I think your story is a really good example of that. So I've been just doing a little bit of research on you. I'm very impressed with the weathering of the storm of the ups and downs you've gone through, the mental strength it takes to get from where you've been to where you are now, and how you're still going with your business, which we'll get to. But I think the best place to start is the beginning. First off, I saw you were born on December 5th, which is a great day. I was also born on December 5th.
Here we go, man.
So I saw you were born in Florida. I saw your dad, it looked like, was a football player growing up. So for you, who were, like, your big role models, like, your big influences, and what did you aspire to be when you were little?
Man, my biggest role model and biggest influence was my pops. So growing up as a kid, you know, my dad never made it to the league, but he did play, he played a little bit of college, and it wasn't a huge school. It was some school in Georgia. I don't even remember the name of it, but his graduating class was the first class to win a state title in my town, and he played fullback, linebacker. He kicked sometimes. He played all over the field, and at that time, I guess that was just common. And everywhere I used to go, and this started way back when I started playing recreation flag football when I was 6 or 7 years old. And I used to always hear, like, hey, man, you're going to be as good as your dad. You're going to be as good as your dad. I mean, your dad was a beast. And, you know, your dad was this, that, and the other. And from then and go on, so forth and so on. And as I got older, it just, you know, the more and more I heard it from older people that played with them, you know, uncles and aunts, stuff like that, more and more I heard it just inspired me to be more like him and just try to exceed what he done in high school, even though I didn't get the state championship. That don't mean I wasn't nicer than him in high school. But it just inspired me to just continue to grow and get better and better and better at my game because I just didn't want to live in his shadow.
Gotcha.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh man, everybody used to go, you know, before I got like recognized, everybody used to go, everybody was like, oh, stop, bro. You're Garrett Blount, son. I'm like, bro, yes, bro. Yeah. My name is LeGarrette. Like, you know what I'm saying? They were like, oh man. And they used to call him, I guess they used to call him Applejack or Jack, whatever it was. And from rumor has it, and this is a rumor because I never really seen any film because this is he's old. So rumor has it is that he hit a guy so hard one time that back when he played, they had the face masks that come, you know, the face masks that come all the way down, and that was common. Well, we don't have that anymore. But back then, everybody had that line. And I've heard a rumor that he hit a guy so hard that he dented it in and broke the buckles off the chin strap.
Wow.
And I've heard this story so many times, and it never changes. So, I guess it's credible. But I used to just hear stuff like that about my dad growing up, and it inspired me to just want to be better, want to be just better than him, and, you know, get a lot more recognition than he did. And, you know, look, man, I'm nice too, you know, I'm better than he ever was, you know, and that's kind of what ignited it and what it inspired me to just get to the spot that I was in at that point in time. I just held that with me the whole time of growing up and playing football.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, especially in like a very small town. And I'm guessing your dad is a pretty big guy too.
Yeah, he's about right now. My dad pushing 60, 58, 55 or something like that. He's about 6'1", 6'2", probably about 230.
Okay. So runs in the family for sure.
Yeah. He's solid. He still works out, still lives, still go walking, still run and all that stuff. It's a habit for him at this point.
Okay. So for you, did you play any other sports growing up or was it just football?
I played football. I played baseball. I dabbled in basketball a little bit in high school. And I ran track in high school.
Okay. All right. And so in high school, I saw you played varsity all 4 years. You were playing varsity at the age of 14. At that point, were you bigger than everybody or were you a late bloomer?
I wasn't bigger than everybody, but as far as height, I was just as tall as most of the guys. I was just as tall as the guys. At 14, I was probably like 5'11", probably 175 pounds.
Okay, not quite.
180. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, a lot of the guys aren't that big, but I was just really tall and skinny. I didn't put the weight on until about my junior years when I put on, probably like 25 pounds or so and got to around like 215, from then on, I was able to put it on easily, so when I left high school, I was probably around like 230.
Okay. I didn't look at any footage of you in high school, but I mean, imagine if you're that big in a small town.
Man, that's hard to do. That's probably hard to find.
Yeah.
I got it though, but it's probably hard to find on the internet.
Gotcha. So were you just like dominating at that point? Was it pretty hard for just one person to tackle you when you're that big as a junior or senior?
Oh yeah. Nobody was, I never got tackled by just one person when I was in high school. I had some pretty ridiculous runs. Had some really, really, really ridiculous stats. I want to say I played a game one time in high school where if all of my runs and plays would have counted, I probably would have had about 500 yards rushing.
Oh, my goodness.
But I think I ended the match with like 320 or something, 330.
If you have some old clips of that you can send to me, I would love to put it on the video version of this.
Oh yeah, they ain't gonna look as clear as the ones we get now. It's gonna be a little crazy.
Yeah, and so for you coming from like a small high school, right? I mean, you knew you were dominating. You knew you could play at that level. Do you feel like coming from a small town and not being in the time where there's like online of all this footage? Do you think that hurt your recruiting and getting noticed? What was your recruiting process like?
I don't think it hurt it, but it definitely didn't help it. I feel like I got as much recognition for someone in a small town as you can get.
Okay.
Without being like Mr. Football or, without doing something crazy. Like for instance, Antoine Smith, he played at Pahokee in Florida, and I think he probably was averaging 2,000 yards rushing a season.
Yes.
Something like that. He won Mr. Football. He started getting offers from Florida State and places like that. I didn't really get any big offers. Probably like I got Auburn, I got Memphis. I didn't get any schools in Florida, which was crazy to me because I didn't want to leave, but I didn't get any schools in Florida. It was just like Auburn, Memphis, like Georgia. Those are probably my three major offers. And yeah, they're big offers, but I wasn't interested in any of those schools at the time. I hadn't went and did no official visits or anything like that because I just wasn't interested in going to any of those schools. I thought I was going to be a Florida guy.
Okay.
So that was why I wasn't really interested in any of those schools. I just didn't want to really leave. But my hand kind of got forced because I didn't have the grades to go to a D1 school, so I had to go to a junior college first.
Okay. So what made you, when you had to choose a junior college, like, And I got a bunch of questions up about East Mississippi because, I mean, with all the Last Chance U and all those documentaries, like, I personally love watching them, and they are a lot bigger now than when you were there. But what, at that point, what made you choose East Mississippi?
We met with the coaches, they met with my parents, and, you know, the big thing for them was if we were going to have someone that was going to be able to take care of me, because it's my first time ever leaving home. I had never left out of Florida, you know, until then. I mean, I was living besides, like, once, like, little visits here and there, you know. I drove to Auburn a couple of times, and then went, obviously, like, some Florida schools for, like, unofficials and stuff. But I think the biggest part of that was just they were able to, you know, make my parents feel secure and reassure them that while I was in Mississippi, and obviously, I mean, Mississippi is known for a lot of other things than football, so they just wanted to make sure I was going to be safe and be well taken care of, and, you know, not have to worry about this thing or that thing, or, you know, being able to get transportation here and there, and stuff like that. And they made us feel really comfortable with it, you know, and they made me feel comfortable with it. They made my parents feel really comfortable with it. And the head coach was Roger Carr, who played in the NFL for a while. So that was some of the main reasons why I went to East Mississippi.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, seems like it was a good decision in the long run. But at the time when you're there grinding, and I'm sure you think to yourself, like, I have the ability to be playing D1 at these levels. What was your mindset like when you first get there, you show up and you see that it's a small town? Like, I read that there wasn't even, like, restaurants open, that in order for you to eat, you had to get, like, bacon and bread at the gas station.
Oh yeah. There's no restaurants there at all. There's no restaurants there at all.
That's crazy. So what was your mindset?
The only way that you would eat is if you go to the cafeteria, or there's two gas stations that's right down the street, on, you know, one on each side of the street, and they cook, like, chicken, mac and cheese, like, you know, gas. I don't know what a lot of places they do, but I know in Florida, a lot of down south places have these little stores that you go to. They fried chicken. It's like a little mini deli. Yeah. Fried chicken. They cook mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, all that stuff. And it was a store that I always went to. You know, I went down there while my parents sent me money. I would go get the money from, you know, whatever it used to be. I haven't done it in a long time, but you wire money or whatever. And you go get that, and then I just buy me some food and just make it last throughout the day. And then eventually, when my parents, when the football season started, they started visiting a lot more often, like coming to the games and stuff. And they brought me a couple hot plates. I don't know if you know what hot plates are, but they're just like miniature burners, like that's on the stove, but you just like one single one. And they're probably, you know, this big. And they brought me a couple of those, and they brought me a couple pans, and they brought me a couple pots. Obviously, I had a couple mini fridges. And, you know, whenever I get a chance, we would go to DeKalb. And it's like a little grocery store there. There's this, not a lot of variety, but like, necessities, you know, you got your hamburger meat and you got your chicken and da, da, da. And I used to go get that stuff and then bring it back to my room. And when I get hungry, you know, obviously if I couldn't go get food from the gas station or whatever, I just whip up me some hamburgers, or I'll just, you know, scramble me some hamburger meat and, you know, make some hamburger helper or whatever. And, you know, I would eat on that for a few days and stuff like that. But that was, you know, that was my, that was how I was surviving out there.
Yeah, it sounds like you found ways to eat pretty good. I read that when you would get back from like the holiday breaks, your coach, if you were like a little over on the weight, that they would come and wake you up at 6 a.m. at your dorm and go make your run. What was your, just like your whole mental state of being there, of just having to live in a place like that and have that day-to-day grind? Like, were you just like kind of looking forward to like your big goals, or were you frustrated that you were there?
I had gotten at that point, I had gotten to know the all of the coach staff and a lot of the guys I was playing with. I had gotten off personally. And, you know, at first you don't really understand, I mean, you do understand, like, okay, I'm out of my weight range, like I'm a little bit heavier, and but you understand, but in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, you know, whatever we're doing, you know, whether it's working out or this, that, and the other, this is the weight is going to come off. And that was really how it worked. That was really how I first got introduced to like managing weight.
Okay.
And they used to have me wake up at 6, go get on the treadmill, run for 30 minutes, get out, go shower and all that stuff. And that's usually how I started my day all the way until I got my weight down. And I think I might have showed up 8 pounds overweight. It was great. Like I did it like every day for like a season. I probably did it for like a week or so.
Okay.
And after that, it was just, I gotta make sure, I don't have these weight problems next year.
Okay. And then seasons go by, you play well there. And then it comes down to like deciding where you're going to play college ball. You end up going to Oregon. And you were just saying that you didn't really want to leave Florida. Now all of a sudden you're going to a place that couldn't be much further. What made you choose Oregon, and what was that decision-making process like?
So, kind of similar, you know, I'm being so far away from home. My parents just want to make sure I was just well taken care of. And I just wanted to, you know, obviously be reassured as well. I was really nervous at first because I had never been anywhere that far. Mississippi is in driving distance, so that was easy, you know, 8-9 hours, whatever, on the road. But obviously you can't drive to, I mean, you can drive to Oregon, but this is going to take you some days.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they just wanted to make sure that, like I said, you know, that was like my whole process of this was just, you know, kind of the same. And, you know, with the extra incentives of, you know, getting a per diem check and, you know,
little different facilities there. In Oregon.
Yeah.
Little different facilities in Oregon than East Mississippi.
Way different, way different facilities. The uniforms, just the perks, the people that been associated with it, the guys that were, I went to Oregon on an official visit while I was at East Mississippi. I went to Oregon on an official visit. And Jonathan Stewart was my host. And I remember talking to him while I was there, and I was asking him, I'm like, bro, are you, this is a huge decision, like life-changing decision for me. I need to know if you're leaving or not. Because he was a junior.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, I need to know if you're leaving or not. Like, I'm considering coming here. Like, I love everything about it. I love everything I've seen so far. You know, the dorms, the parties, the everything, you know, everything you see around campus, the uniforms, the all of the stuff, you know, everything that you get, the perks of coming to Oregon. And I'm like, man, listen, I'm seriously considering it here. And Florida State is my other option. Like, those are the two places that I'm considering going. Even though I grew up a Florida Gator fan and I hate Florida State with a passion, I was going to go play there. And I was like, bro, are you leaving? And he was like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, so I'm talking to the coaches and I'm telling them, like, man, is Jonathan leaving or is he staying? Or and they're all telling me, like, we don't know. It's kind of up in the air. Like, I'm thinking that he's leaning. And I talked to the running back coach, Coach Campbell. I'm like, bro, what you think? Like, man, what you think? Like, I know y'all want me here, but don't shoot me no bullshit. Like, tell me. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because I know how that go. Oh, yeah, he even, oh, well, when you get there and sign, oh, well, he decided to come back. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, bro, shoot it to me straight. Like, I don't want to know. Like, I you know, and he was like, I honestly think he's leaving. I feel like if he doesn't leave, like, I would be shocked. And that's what Coach Cam told me. If he does leave, I would be shocked after what he did in the Sun Bowl and, you know, how well his junior season, how successful the season was. I'd be surprised if he didn't leave. And so the last day on my visit, I talked to him again. I'm like, man, I'm not going to tell anybody, but I want to know. And he was like, well, you probably won't tell anybody, but if you just come here, they don't kind of assume, and it's going to be pretty obvious that you coming here because they need another back. And he told him, like, bro, I'm not going to tell nobody. And he told me, yeah, I'm going to go. Like, I'm going to leave, bro. I ain't coming back. And then right after that, that's kind of how I started making phone calls. Like, hey, Jason Williams, that was one of the receivers. Because I wore number four. I wore number 32 3 years of high school, and I wore number four for 1 year. Well, I ended up liking number four a lot. So when I went to junior college at East Mississippi, I wore number four. And they gave me Jason Williams' phone number, the wide receiver. And I remember, like, they gave me his phone number, and I called him. I'm like, hey, man. I'm like, man, look, the only thing that's stopping me from coming to Oregon is not being able to get number four. Are you willing to give that up? Like, can I? And this is going to his senior year. He's been four this whole time. So this is going into his senior year. And I called him, like, man, look, man, can I get the four? You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, I want to come out there so bad. I want to ship, but I need to know about. And he was like, oh, you want the four? I got you. No problem. I got you. That's nothing. I got you. You can have the four. I'm going to get mine. You can have the four. Yeah, cool. I come there, and I go to the equipment room, and I'm seeing all this stuff, and I go to my locker, and I'm seeing all this stuff, and I'm like, wait, I see the nine there. I'm like, wait, this ain't my number. Like, this ain't what? Like, nah, I'm supposed to be four. And then I see Jason walk around the corner. He was like, yeah, bro, I'm sorry, I couldn't get rid of it.
Oh,
I was like, it crushed me. I'm like, damn, bro, that's fucked up. It is a good story. It is what it is.
And that is having that number nine, is that what led to you wearing 29 in the NFL?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I got to the man, these equipment guys are smart. You know, they make everything make sense. So I got to the league and I got number 42 with the Tennessee Titans. And after I left there, I went to the Buccaneers. And I'm like, look, y'all got, you know, 32? Well, I wore that in high school. One of the other running backs that was a bit, obviously, had 32. I'm like, bro, I need that 32. Like, let me get that ball, set it up. And he was like, nah. So I'm like, all right, cool. So my equipment guy told me, he was like, hey, you want 27? I'm like, bro, 27 fucking stinks. Like, that's an ugly number. And then he was like, bro, Eddie George wore 27. They just trying to go on and on and explain, you know, why 27 is there. I'm like, man, nah, man, forget that. Like, I don't want that. Like, I want, like, a dope running back number, like 28 or 32 or something like that. And it was like, well, weren't you number nine in college? 2 + 7 = 9. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, it is what it is. Like, all right, cool. Fine, that makes sense. And then I just got the 27 from there and rolled that thing out.
I bet you wish you could have wore a single digit in the NFL like they can this year.
I knew it was coming, too. I knew it was coming. And I thought it would have been when I was in the league. Because I was in the league for 9 years. So I'm like, eventually, they don't, you know what I'm saying? But 2 years removed, yeah. Lord be old.
Well, it's not too late, man. But you would have had to pay a pretty penny because you would have had to pay for the lost sales of your number switch if you didn't switch teams.
And a lot of my jerseys were in stores. I wasn't finna pay that.
Yeah. Okay, so at Oregon, had a really great first season because Jonathan Stewart wasn't there. Rushed for over 1,000 yards, scored 17 touchdowns. Second year, you had that off-the-field thing, which I'm not going to ask you about because I know you had to answer that all the time. But long story short, it felt like you were really harshly punished for that. What I'm more curious of is, like, for you as a college kid that's probably looking forward to going to the NFL, and now you're getting, like, most of your senior year taken away from you, what was your mental state at that point? Was there a time where you felt like giving up, or was it kind of like just a chip on your shoulder you wanted to keep going?
At that point in time, man, I was in a really dark place. I didn't know if I wanted to go home. I didn't know if I wanted to stay. I just had a kid. It was rough. I was going on, like, when I first went back to class and stuff after that incident, when I first started going back to class, I couldn't go anywhere on campus without hearing about it. Like, I couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I couldn't go anywhere without someone being like, hey, bro, you know, hey, bro, why'd you not buddy out? Or, hey, bro, why did you do this? Or, hey, bro, you know, and going into class and getting standing ovations. And, like, it was just weird. You know what I'm saying? And to the points where I didn't want to go to class. I stopped going for a minute. I just stopped going, and I had my teammates bring what I needed to do to my home, like to my apartment. I'm like, bro, whatever it is. Cause I, and most of my classes, there was at least one football player. And I'm like, bro, whatever it is, bro, just bring it to me. My tutors and stuff got a hold of my professors and stuff like that. And just like, well, this is what he's going through. And, you know, obviously I'm not there. So, you know, they was just giving my work to like my teammates and stuff. And I was getting to the point where, you know, I was just like, you know what? You know, should I find somebody to talk the shit? Should I like suing? Like, I didn't know what to do. I was just in a dark place, and I was getting, Chip Kelly wasn't helping me. Like, he wasn't like calling and texting me, hey, are you okay? Or da da da. Like, Mike Bellotti was, though, the head coach before there. I'm like, that's who I was hearing from. And, you know, I talked to Tony Dungy, and I'm talking to these guys, you know, that are reaching out from different places, but I'm not talking to my head coach, the guy that, you know, and I'm feeling like, damn, you don't feel any kind of remorse. You don't think this was harsh. You don't think, you know, for what I did, because I've seen people before that and ever since that, I've seen people do a lot worse.
Yeah.
One game suspension, you know,
yeah.
And granted, I'm understanding, so I know that this is his first ever game as a head coach, you know, and I know he's trying to make a statement, and I know he's, you know what I'm saying? I know he's trying to put it like, hey, I got to establish.
Yeah.
Who's the boss here?
Mm-hmm.
And I understood all of that, but I just feel like at that age, what, 20 years old or whatever it was, I feel like he did handle it on the impulse because he had so much pressure from so many people. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You should punish him. You should do this. You should do that. You should get him out of here. And you're hearing announcers. During that game, we watched it over and over in his office. You hear people say, you hear the announcers and stuff saying, oh my God, there's no, you know, you should get suspended for the rest of the entire season for that. And you should do this right there. And you should kick him off the team and this stuff like that. And I think those pressures got to him, and that's what led him to make, you know, a rational decision of suspending me for the whole season. And then he's in the office crying to me and stuff like that. Like, at that point in time, I feel like, bro, you're my coach. Like, they shouldn't influence you to do anything. You should have my back, if anything. Like, I sat here and told you verbatim what happened from the beginning of that to the end of that. I told you what happened, and all you're hearing is, I punched him and I went towards the crowd, and that's all you're hearing, but you're not hearing that, you know, why I punched him and why I'm walking towards the crowd, like, and I'm telling him this stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, bro, this guy in the crowd spit on me, like, while I'm walking to the locker room. Like, if I spit on you right now, like, me and you gonna be in here fighting. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Just imagine that, bro. That's probably one of the biggest signs of disrespect that you can get as a man, woman, whatever. Like, that's one of the biggest signs of disrespect you can get is for someone to spit on you.
Right?
I feel like anybody in the world, someone spit on you, it's go time. Mm-hmm. Like, bro, what? Like, you disrespect me in the worst way. So they spit, or the guy spit on me. Like, and I know a lot of people don't watch the clip in depth. They just see what they see. And the guy spit on me, so I tried to. I'm trying to get to him in the crowd. And when I try to swim around and get to him in the crowd, another fan slapped me in the face.
Jesus,
you know what I'm saying? And then another fan threw a chair at me. But no one is seeing that side. They just seeing like, oh man, LeGarrette Blount is going crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and
yeah,
so that's why I'm like, me and Chip will never have the relationship that we had at one point, because I feel like at that point in time, he had a chance to have my back after I told him everything that had happened, and he didn't. And I think his hand was pushed and pressured by Coach Bellotti and a couple other people to
give him
the chance to get reinstated.
he could have been, you never know too, because he could have been pushed by like boosters and stuff, especially like the high college level football. You never know what goes on.
Right, right.
And like, especially they could have influence with the media to push that narrative one direction for a certain reason.
Right.
Like, when I was on the, I was listening to the Pat McAfee show when you were on there, and like, that was the first time I heard, just like Pat and his boys, the first time here that you guys, you apologize the next day, like call the guy, like you never hear any of that stuff. So it's like,
nah. Yeah, yeah. I apologized to him and his coach the next day. And I left it at that. You know what I'm saying? And he was just like, oh, okay, cool. And I'm like, bro, you ain't going to apologize for what you said to me? Like, of course not. You know what I'm saying? Because nobody knows what you said to me, you know? And if I go out and say what you said to me, it's going to look bad as an excuse of why I acted the way I did. Oh, so it just justifies why you acted like... No, I'm not justifying. I'm just, if you're asking me, I'm telling you what was said.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So.
So what I'm curious of is like, when something like that happens, like obviously at the moment it sucks, but in the long run, obviously, do you think that like that moment, because obviously that led to you being undrafted when you were probably one of the best running backs in that draft class, and you were the only rookie that.
The best.
you were the only rookie to rush for over 1,000 yards, and proved that throughout your whole NFL career that you were the best from that draft class. Do you think that an incident like that made you go undrafted, do you think that was a chip on your shoulder that may have even pushed you to even be better down the road?
I held that, you know, that was something that I held close to my heart. I just felt like in my mind, I didn't ever want to feel like that again, and I didn't ever want anyone to have access to my feelings personally to make me feel like, to make me go into as dark of a place that I went to, like, and that just toughened me up on the outside, like hardened my shell. I kept that chip on my shoulder, like, and I used that every single time I went out to play. Like I used to that, because I just feel like everybody viewed me as one type of person, or, you know, everybody viewed me as just that another, like basically what I did, like basically that one incident discredited everything I did the year before. Like I rushed, you know, set, like you said, 17, however many touchdowns and 1,000 yards, and that never got talked about again because of that incident. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, bro, that incident shouldn't define who I am as a person, and definitely shouldn't define how I am as a player. You know what I'm saying? You go look at the numbers, you're saying that I'm the best running back in the draft, and I understand how the league goes. You know, I'm going to get if I can get you for cheap, I'm going to get you for cheap. If nobody's going to draft you, I'm going to wait until the draft is over. I'm going to be the first one on the phone, because whenever the draft was over, six teams called me.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I just didn't.
Yeah, it's interesting to learn, because I'm just learning more and more about like how the media pushes these false narratives. Like, somebody in an organization will go to media to push a false narrative just to drive the price down on a player that they want. It's pretty crazy out there. But so continuing on your roller coaster, right? So then you go to the Titans, and you said multiple teams were calling you. Was that just you felt like the best fit, or were they just the best price for you?
I thought that was the best fit. I kind of agreed with Mike Singletary that I would go to the 49ers.
Okay.
On the phone, I'm like, look, man, because he called me and he's saying, hey, man, we want you here, this, that, and other. Like, man, we know you're talented. We want to play you immediately. Da, da, da. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. But y'all had me sitting there in the draft, and y'all decided to draft Anthony Dixon and not me. Knowing good and well that I'm way, 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 way better. It's not even a question. It ain't even, the scale is so different. I'm just that much better than Anthony Dixon. Don't even all that. That was my dog. And I got, that's, he cool people, you know what I'm saying? But even he knows, you know, at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, all that stuff. Like I'm letting all these guys know. Like, I'm not hiding it. I'm telling them, like, when they talk to me, I'm like, bro, yeah, bro, I'm the coldest running back in this class. I'm telling other running backs in the class that, like, yeah, that's me. Like, I'm him. Like, okay. Prove me wrong. Like, I'm telling them that. And I'm doing the meetings in the at the combine and stuff. So I'm like, why did y'all draft me? Y'all drafted Anthony Dixon. What's the reason behind that? It was like, well, we knew we'd be able to get you at, we knew we'd be able to have a shot at you at free agency and this, that, and other. I'm like, well, shit, I deserve to be a free agent more than him. But I'm not saying, I'm not hating on him, but I'm just saying, like, bro, when we, if we're going off production, I'm the nicest you're going to get. And he was like, yeah, man, we just want you here. And, he's going to be a teams guy. And I told my agent, I'm like, I like Singletary. Like, that's cool. I could do that. And then the Tennessee fact, Jeff Fisher called. Hey, we got rid of, we're short. We don't have Lindale White anymore. We just got Alvin Pierman. I think he's from Tennessee, or I don't remember exact. We got Alvin Pierman or something like that. AP. We got Javon Winger and we got Chris Johnson. And we just, I think they had, no, we didn't sign. We didn't sign Sam to afterwards. So I'm like, yeah, like, shoot, Chris Johnson, y'all speedster. Like, y'all need a power back. So I'm like, damn, this is the perfect fit for me. Y'all just lost Lindale White. I'm there. I'm better than Lindale.
Sounds perfect.
I'm younger than Lindale. I'm fat. I'm everything more better than Lindale. Every aspect of the game. So, and I'm like, that's perfect. That's perfect fit for me. And then they brought on Sam Condotto. Like a little bit later, and I made it all the way to the last cuts, and I'm talking to CJ, because I always kicked it with him while I was out there, and I'm like, man, dang, bro, I'm like, bro, they're gonna get rid of me, and I'm seeing these guys go back and forth in the coach's room, and like, bro, you ain't going nowhere, bro, they love you, bro, they love you, like, they love you, dog. I'm like, all right, cool, and it come down to the last day, and they done made the 53 man roster, and 60 man or whatever it is, and I'm on it. I'm juiced. I'm amped up. I'm hyped.
What?
Then Jeff called me. It was like, man, we love you. We're sorry. We got to let you go because we got to sign a couple special teams guys because we got a couple guys that's hurt and they ain't going to be able to start the season. And they're special teams guys, so we need two special teams guys. I'm like, well, shit, because somebody else, like, y'all need me too, and he was like, I'm sorry, man, this hurts, this is heartbreaking, I don't want to do it, but I have to. He said, but when I let you go, the Buccaneers already have called about you and they want to claim you off waivers when I let you go. So I'm like, all right, cool. So boom, I'm in the office and He said, I'm finna call him for you. So he get on the phone with the Buccaneers and he call him and, hey, Raheem, what's up? He said, hey, man, you want to be a Buccaneer? Yeah, I want to be a Buccaneer. And if you claim y'all waivers, And that kind of rest was history. I went to the Buccaneers and did, you know, whatever I did over there.
Yeah, I'm a Falcons fan, so I remember. Okay, so yeah, you played great at the Bucs. I don't even remember why, if you got traded or what happened, but then you end up going to the New England. So what was that shift like, and what was the culture difference in going to like to the Patriots?
So Doug got drafted. So during that draft, during the time that Doug got drafted, I was hanging out with a kid, me and he just chilling, just hanging at his house watching the draft, and we look, he thinking that they're going to draft a corner and get rid of him, and I'm thinking they're going to draft a cornerback and get rid of him. This is year three. So 2012. And that whole draft go by. I think they drafted maybe Mark Barron safety. So Akeem like, yes, sir, I'm good. and I'm in there like, yes, sir. And like, we both good. And like, we straight. Then they go to pick 32, and they say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have traded it with such and such. Buccaneers pick Doug Martin.
Oh, shit.
That was my house. We looked at each other like, damn, bro. And then I played that 1 year with Doug, and they traded me to the Patriots after that, and that, man, that shock was different.
Yeah.
That shock was different because I went from being with the Buccaneers, a younger team that's, you know, more so my speed, I could hang out with after practice, after work and stuff like that. And I can hang out with them after practice. And I went to a place where a lot of veterans, you got Brady and you got Rob Mayo and you got Brandon Spikes and you got a lot of veterans out there, and the culture was different. So, you know, I'm sensing the difference. Like, I'm like, all right, well, I could tell these guys don't really go out. Like, I could tell these guys don't really do this. Like, I could tell. And so it was definitely different, because couldn't have been falling in the locker room. Whereas I just came from a spot where I could be in the locker room and, you know, go to, you know, hey, what's good, Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And like, I went to a place where you can't do that. There was no doing that. Like, you get in trouble for doing that. And so that was a shock to me, because I couldn't do a lot of the things that that I wanted to. And it was different, man. That the weather change was different.
Like, yeah.
The snow and the freezing temperatures, and like, that was all new to me, because in Eugene and Oregon, it rained a lot, but it didn't snow a lot. But it rained a lot. And that was different. That snow was different for me.
As a running back, though, especially when those playoff runs with the Patriots, I mean, I feel like at some point you had to enjoy the snow because you knew you were probably going to get the rock a little more, right?
Oh, yeah. It has the advantages for sure. But, yeah, I knew, you know, certain games I was going to get the football a lot more than usual, you know. And then I know some games going into a game that, you know, for instance, whenever 12 was suspended for those four games, I knew that I was going to get the rock a lot, you know, those four games.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so back on your roller coaster of your career, right? So you go from the Bucs, then your first stint with the Patriots, and you played one season with them before leaving, right?
Yep, I played one season with them, and then I went to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
But you won the Super Bowl in your first year in the Patriots, right?
I did it.
You did it. So it was...
I wanted the next year.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. As soon as you went back. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay. So then you're on the Steelers, and then, of course, on your roller coaster, more off the field stuff pops up, and then you're right back where you started. What is it like for a player to leave a team and then just come right back? Like, oh, what's up, guys? I'm back. Like, what is that feeling like?
I don't know what it's like for most guys, but for me, I was welcomed with open arms. Everybody was so excited for me to be back. They were so happy to have me back. So that's how it was for me. They just welcomed me with open arms, and they was, oh, crap, bro, we're back. And, you know, everybody wanted, hey, take a picture, and he's back, and this, that, and the other. So it was heartwarming, because it felt good to, you know, feel wanted and know that I'm going to be somewhere where I'm going to be utilized. Whereas when I was in Pittsburgh, it was games that I wouldn't even touch the rock. And I'm not like a, you know, 4 or 5 carry a game guy. You know, like I feel like I've paid my dues and I've done enough and showed enough to where I the respect to at least get 10 carries. You know what I'm saying? If we run the ball 45, 50 times, I feel like that's not much to ask if I'm only asking for 10 or 12 of those 50, you know. And I mean, 50 might be an exaggeration, but I know there's been games where, you know, and granted, well, I love Le'Veon, and I think that with a chance, he still might be one of the nicest running backs in the league. But I don't know what's going on now, but I love him, and I respect this game to the fullest, because he's just that nice. But it was games where he was getting 35 and 40 carries, and I'm not even seeing the field. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, bro, this is frustrating. Yeah. I know it's a team game, and I'm not hating, because whenever you run for your 200, I'm showing you love. Like, hey, bro, you was going crazy. Da, da, da. And he's telling me, yeah, bro, I appreciate it. Why they ain't giving you the rock? you know, why they giving you the rock? Bro, I was pouring crazy, big trash. I mean, you could have ran for 100 too, bro. You know, he's telling me that, and that's making me, you know, a little bit more, you know, anxious inside. And, you know, I'm like, and I'm like, bro, even he's saying, you know, saying, but granted, during the course of the game, if I'm giving the ball a lot, I'm not going to go tell the head coach, hey,
yeah,
go put in Le'Veon or go put LeGarrette in. So from his standpoint, I understand, all that shit, y'all can get to me 40 times. I'm going to take it 40 times. I'm not going to be like, hey, bro, after 30 carries, bro, get you the other 40. Like, so I understand his side, but I didn't understand their side. What was the point in not letting me play? Was it just personally to get him back 200-yard gain, or was it, you know, something else? And they would never clarify that for me.
Damn, it sounds like you still never know. You still don't know.
Still don't know.
Damn. So what? Yeah, I mean, that's a roller coaster of just a season, because most that season you're on the Steelers, you're not getting the rock, and then that same season at the end, you're the one holding the Super Bowl trophy, right? You know, with the Lombardi trophy. Right.
And the thing is while I was there, and the thing is what made it even tougher is they knew that I could do it, because earlier that season, I think the game against the Panthers, I think maybe I might have had 24 carries for like 170, and I had like 17 for like 120. You know, so we obviously we can you know, do this together. You know what I'm saying? Both of us to eat and both of us to stay fresh. If you need one or the other, like, we'll be fresh. Like, there nobody won't have to be 40 carries worn down and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, that would have been crazy just between you guys, too, like 35, 40 carries a game between the two of you. That could have gone all the way through the playoffs.
Yeah, that could have gone all the way. We would have been playing the team that I was holding the trophy up for in the AFC Championship.
Okay, but that must have been a good feeling, like, at the end of the season, you're like, told you guys.
Yeah, it was a great feeling, because when they let me go, I think they let me go on a Tuesday. And let me go on a Tuesday, or maybe they let me go on, it was Monday night, it might have been a Monday night game or something. But anyway, they let me go, and then the Patriots claimed me the next day, and I flew out there the next day, and I started that Sunday.
Yeah, I remember just as a football fan, seeing that happen, you get picked up by the Patriots. I'm like, oh, here they go again. I don't know how they always get the first dibs, but here they go again. And then the next season, that was the one when Brady started as suspended, right?
Right, right.
And then you guys beat my Falcons in the most ridiculous Super Bowl.
Man.
I don't really want to talk about that game too much. But for you, just as like watching that game unfold, you guys are down 28-3, and then like what was the locker room like at halftime as the Patriots, and what was like the mentality on the sideline as you guys are slowly inching away and everything was going your way?
It was pretty quiet in the locker room at halftime, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot of talking. It wasn't a lot of – everybody was just kind of quiet, focused, locked in. And we knew we weren't out of it. So we always felt like – we never felt like we were out of a game as long as 12 was playing. We just didn't. We just never felt like we were out of a game as long as he was playing. And when things started going our way – we kind of knew. We didn't know that we were going to win, but we knew that we were going to be able to make it a competitive game. We knew right then. And obviously with you know, the Julio catch and all that stuff going their way, which by the way, he's impossible to defend. So we just kind of figured, you know, now it's going to go back and forth. And we had the Julian catch towards the end.
That was crazy.
And at that point, when we had the catch by Julian, at that point, I'm like, yeah, we're probably going to win this game.
Yeah, I had the same thought, man. As soon as that happened, and then I saw you guys won the toss at overtime, I was like, this is how it ends. It's over.
Yep. Yep. Because it happens like that. It happened. Once some weird, miraculous stuff happens, that team always, 9 times out of 10, wins the game. Like, for instance, when we played against the Seattle Seahawks, and I don't know if it was cursed. I don't know who it was, But he went to catch the ball and he dropped it, but he kicked it with his feet a couple times. And then he reached up and caught it. And then he got up and started running, and Malcolm pushed him out of bounds. But I'm like, bro, at that point in time, I'm thinking, in that Super Bowl, damn, bro, how? You know what I'm saying? Like, well, how? That's some like schoolyard type stuff.
Yeah, you've been a part of some crazy Super Bowls. Because the next season you went to the Eagles, and then you're one of like, I think, 11 players in NFL history to win back-to-back Super Bowls with different teams.
Yeah.
So all those three Super Bowls, I mean, that was a crazy
one. Kenyon Barnett beat it too.
Chris Long did it too. Chris Long did it with you, didn't he? Wasn't he on both teams?
Yeah, he did it with me. That's my guy. He did it with me. That's my guy, man. That's my dude. Love Chris.
So of those, all those Super Bowls, is there one that's to you is sweeter than the other, or are they all just very different?
Philly.
Yeah. What, just because for the city, it's just a bigger deal, you think?
Nah, just because I went crazy in that game.
Okay. It's more fun for you.
I was balling.
Yeah.
I was balling. It's always better when you're playing well and you win. You know what I'm saying? It just makes the fun that much better because you're like, damn, bro, like I played a major part in us getting this dub. Like if I didn't play how I played, ain't no telling how it would have went.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be like a better feeling, like I helped.
Yeah, I wanted to get 100 on him, but Deuce wouldn't let.
What'd you end with? Do you know your stat line?
90. 14 for 90.
Okay.
And a touchdown. But it was a couple of the runs that Jay Ajayi had, I was asking for on the sideline. I'm like, bro, let me get that. I wanted to go crazy on them just for the simple fact that they put me in the situation. I ended up coming up on top of that situation because we went to the Super Bowl, but that put me in a situation to where a lot of teams fell off of signing me because they put this kind of rare tender thing that hadn't been used since like the 1960s on me. I don't know what the tender is called, but you have to look it up. But if you look it up, if you LeGarrette Blount's tender with the Patriots in 2016 or whatever, it'll tell you what the tender is, and it'll when you read it, it's gonna tell you how ridiculous the tender was. Because basically, it says no other team can sign you without compensating us. And it's a period where if a free agent leave your team and they sign with a team over like a certain period, then you get like compensated with like draft pick, whatever that shit is. Well, the teams waited until after that period to start reaching out, the Baltimore Ravens, the Eagles, the Rams, whatever. And then he placed that tender on me. Everybody backed out of stuff for the Eagles.
That's crazy. Did that end up costing you a lot of money?
It did.
Damn. Okay. So then after that, Then your last season in Detroit, which I think you were splitting with a couple of different running backs. You guys had like a committee there, didn't you?
Yeah, the Kerryon Johnson and Theo Riddick.
Yeah. So is that just like what NFL players do? They go to Detroit, then they retire? Or what was the decision making for why you retired?
So I went to Detroit because I love Matt Patricia.
Yeah, that's right.
Personally, he's probably one of the most loyal, cool, down to earth, amazing guys I've ever met. He checks on my family. Like, to this day, he still calls and checks on my family and stuff like that. So I just wanted them to have like a comfort blanket in Detroit. You know what I'm saying? Like, not to go somewhere where you don't know anybody. You know what I'm saying? And he was one of the people that like reached out to me for a deal. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know what I'm saying? I'll come over here and play with you, baby. You know what I'm saying? Not knowing what kind of atmosphere he was going to bring. I didn't know that he was going to bring the Patriots way over there. Or try to. And I still wish he would have done his own thing. I think he would have been more successful if he just done his own thing. But, you know, I went to Detroit. And then after that, I was just like, I had a couple workouts with a couple teams. And I got a couple calls from a couple teams, which made me feel good with the decision to retire because I wasn't forced.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't being like, damn, hey, Zeke, call this team and call that team and call this team and call that team. And these teams saying, nah, we're not interested in LeGarrette. Nah, we're not interested in LeGarrette. So I had a few teams, like a couple teams, like Raiders was one of the teams that was calling me like, hey, man, come look out for us. And I was already thinking about it at the time. I went out there and I talked to him and stuff like that. And I just was like, man, I don't think this is it. Like, this might be the wrap. And this might be it for me, man. I'm good. I've won 3 Super Bowls. I've played 9 years. I've given the game everything I feel like I could give it. And I would never want to go out there and play and end on a bad note, you know.
Yeah.
Go out there and, you know, just cause I might fumble the ball a lot, or, you know, I might, you know, get hit wrong and, you know, might end the season. Or the last thing I wanted to do is end, you know, my career on a bad note, you know, where I had to be forced to retire.
Yeah.
So that's what made me make the decision. Where at that played a factor in the decision. The biggest factor that weighed heavy on me was the fact that the kids were just like, we don't get to see you that much, and, you know, we're in school while you're there, and we want to come out and hang with you, and we won't get to see you until January, and, you know, stuff like that. And I just wanted to be, the best dad I can, so I wanted to be, you know, fully a part of their lives. So that was one of the major reasons why I let it go.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, and yeah, I think how you do one thing is how you do everything. So just being the best at whatever you're doing. So now you transition into your own business with LG's Feel Good, which is a CBD yes. company. What? When did the initial idea come for that, and how did that process start?
The initial idea came from me and my business partner. We started talking about different alternative ways to, like, manage pain rather than using, you know, pain pills and stuff like that. Because pain pills, I mean, if we're being 100% honest, bro, pain pills are so addicting. You're getting guys that are overdosing. You're getting entertainers overdosing. You're getting all these people that are, you know, taking advantage of the pain pills. And even though it's, like, personally hard for someone to get, it's really not hard to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look hard enough, it's not hard to get it, get access to that stuff. And a lot of former football players, I'm not going to say, like, now, because I haven't been a part of the game in a year or so, and I don't know what it is, but, like, back before, like, I'm seeing guys, you know, taking all these different pills for, you know, pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's got to be something different. And I learned about this stuff probably like 2 years before I retired is when I got introduced to it. And I'm like, man, this is all right. This is kind of all right, you know. And but I feel like I could get it and manipulate it to the way where they could take full advantage of what I have and not have to worry about, you know, failing tests or anything like that, because some of the things that we were using it had just a form of THC in it somehow, and it was hidden because it wasn't saying, like, oh, THC is in there. It's the AOV. You know, you have to go through and look at the ingredients, started, then it'd be like, oh, cannabis, da, 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 da. And I'm like, if we get hit, we gonna fail a test.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to, or, you know, my dad reached out to me, and I talked to him about it, and we found a way to just put it 100% CBD isolate with no THC involved in it. And it was a roller ball, and it was a salve, so like a balm, and it was patches. And we tested it out, we did trial runs too, got it perfect. And then we got it, and then we sent some to a lot of my NFL friends, some of my actor friends, some basketball, some NBA guys, some UFC guys, and just got it out there. And we're just basically telling them, like, bro, this is a form of dealing with pain without the pills, without the addiction. And you go and I'm telling them guys, like, bro, this is 100%. It's all organic. It's all natural. It's 100% THC free, and it's just an isolate. So it has cayenne in it, and it has, you know, eucalyptus and all that good stuff for your body and skin. Mm-hmm. So you won't have any allergic reactions or anything like that. And we're letting people know, you know, you can use it before you work out. You can use it after you work out. You can use it before a game, after a game. You can use it during the game. Like, and that was one of the biggest things for me, is just to make sure that guys know that they could deal with the pain and stuff like that in a different way, other than like the pills or take shots or whatever the case is. It's different ways to deal with it. And then obviously I had insomnia while I was in the league. Like, I used to stay up all night.
After a game, right? Play
any nights.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, not every night, but some nights, you know, more than others, I'd be up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, just like can't sleep. Like, I'm not tired. Like, I lay down, close my eyes, and I just couldn't sleep. And so we just launched it on Monday. We just dropped anxiety tinctures, the drops, and sleep gummies. That's my forte.
Yeah.
Them gummies are going to help me, because I mean, everybody needs sleep. And sometimes I get it. Sometimes I can't. But these gummies, when I was taking the trial ones, the first ones for just to see how I wanted them, to see how I wanted them to work and how effective they were, I was like, damn, like, I'm in love. Like, whenever we perfect this, like, I'm going to definitely make sure I take these every night to make sure I can get some real rest. And that's why we launched those. And because we met some military guys that a lot of military guys have problems sleeping because of, you know, a variety of reasons. A lot of people just have insomnia. I've met so many people with insomnia, and the wifey has panic attacks every now and then, you know, just because she has OCD, and if she sees, you know, something spill on the ground, if she don't clean it right then, she'll hyperventilate and start freaking out. And these tinctures help her, like, tremendously help her. And so that's why we introduced those to the world yesterday. And, you know, hopefully everybody can get on board and just get on there and try it out and see how it works. It's the best on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I've been taking like edible gummies. Granted, mine have a little THC in them, so I'll try the CBD, see if it works. I'm not as groggy.
This right here ain't gonna make you sleep. This right here ain't gonna make you feel like when you wake up, you're not gonna feel like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're not gonna, like, when you wake up, you won't wake up. Like, you're not gonna wake up and be like, damn, bro, I feel tired. Like, you're not gonna do that. Like, not on these gummies.
Okay, I should probably do that. Cause yeah, I mean, I've had like family members close to me that have had issues with like painkillers and like being addicted to like morphine and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Just switching to like CBD, or I mean, even THC is much better for you than that stuff.
And any of that, right?
Life changing. Yeah. I mean, big
life changing.
So yeah, the whole big pharma thing I could talk to you about for like another hour, how like messed up that whole thing is. So you're in you're in a perfect spot for it, because you can speak from experience of being in the locker room. Because I know, especially in the NFL, like that's where there's a lot of abuse. What before you were introduced to that stuff, what were you using to deal with pain? And then were you using CBD towards the end of your career?
Yeah, I was using CBD towards the end. Like my last 2 years in the league, I was using CBD. But before that, yeah, I was on the. I'm on the same regimen that these guys are drawing. Like, if I'm dealing with pain, like, if they're going to give me some kind of pain pill, I was taking it. You know what I'm saying? I was taking it. I was going to the games, you know, getting a shot and, you know, my shoulder so that I can put my arm across my body. You know what I'm saying? Like, before I'm getting these shots, I'm not even able to, you know, do this. I'm not, you know, and if someone tells me, cross my body with the arm, like before the shot, I'm just doing like, you know, leaning my body back so my arm go up.
Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and then boom, I get a shot, you know, 15 minutes later, I'm doing this, doing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like my shit was never hurt. And I'm like, bro, something that works that good and that fast, it can't possibly be healthy for you.
And again, yeah, after that wears off, what does that feel like?
It is horrific. It hurts way worse than it did before. Like, and it's hard to manage. Like, you can't sleep all, like, I'm just talking about like my shoulders. I'm just talking about like what I've been. You can't sleep on it. You can't get comfortable because every way you turn is a lot worse pain than what it was when I went to sleep the night before the game, when I was able to, you know, kind of turn this way, you know, lay this way, probably, you know, put the arm this way and, you know, just so I don't have to take it across the body or whatever. After the game, I wasn't able to do any of that. After that shot wore off, I wasn't able to do any of that. And sometimes it might wear off at halftime and I might have to get another one.
What was in the shot? Were you taking Toradol?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
It's not healthy, though.
No. So what's
It's not even close.
Yeah. So what's, I mean, I think slowly the whole, we're moving in the right direction, getting more to natural CBD, like the decriminalization of just marijuana and all that stuff in general. I think it's going the right way very slowly.
Right.
What's the long-term vision or what's like the next step for you guys?
Since I just launched a new product on Monday, the sleep gummies and the anxiety tinctures, I just want to continue to grow the business and continue to grow the awareness of the world, you know, just everybody like that is, you don't have to take, man, we have people that have psoriasis.
Really?
People that have, you know,
So what do you do with
what is it when you itch a lot? Eczema. Oh,
yeah, okay. So you rub this stuff on there?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So my niece has eczema really bad. Like she'll take a shower, she'll put on cream, she'll put on lotion, and these dry spots just itch so much. So I'm like, well shoot, if nothing is working, try my CBD. She tried it. Life changing.
Really?
Life changing.
That's
like
she doesn't
obviously you can't completely stop eczema from itching, but she's saying it's so much more to where it's not just intense, where you just feel like you want to dig into your skin. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's a very, very, very way more manageable than it is when she uses like whatever the cream is that she uses for her eczema. Like my product works better. That's basically what she told me. And we have, I don't know what, so my agent's wife has some kind of skin disease. And it's, I don't know if it's vitiligo, but some patches of her skin are white.
Oh,
I don't know exactly what it's called.
I don't know.
But she gets that same skin irritation. Like where it itches really bad and stuff, she's one of those people that like don't eat fried foods.
Oh, really?
Like she don't eat anything that's not healthy. Like literally anything. Like to the point to where when her kids come to my house to eat, they might get sick if they eat like McDonald's or something.
Oh wow!
So you know, and I said that shows a lot because she doesn't use anything that's not all natural or organic.
Dang. Well, yeah, now I think I know what I'm giving all my family for Christmas this year, because I have a bunch of my family members have psoriasis. I have it just a tiny bit, but like my dad, he has to take like shots and stuff in his stomach for it. And like, yeah, but I'll see if that works better.
Yeah. Heck yeah. let him try it out. We got people that have like, man, we got a lot of different people. They use it for a lot of different things. We've had people that bought some and just put it on cold sores and they just go away.
Interesting. Have you ever tried it for like sunburn?
Yep. Funny well, story with that.
Not you, but you know, like maybe it's other people trying to.
Funny story with that. So I had never had sunburn before. My skin dark.
I believe that.
So I have, when I got out here,
I've been burnt before.
Yeah. I already. that's no cup. So when I got out of here, that was the first time I had ever experienced sunburn, and it was right here on my forehead and right around here. And I was doing everything. I'm like, man, what? I didn't know what it was. I'm telling Marissa, like, oh, like my face is burning, like, don't touch it. And she's just like touching it. She's like, oh my God, your face is hot. I'm like, why are you keep touching my face? It's hot, it's burning. Like, don't touch it. It burns when you touch it. And she was like, I think you got sunburn. I'm like, nah, I can't get sunburned. She was like, I don't know where you heard that at, but you can definitely get sunburned. I'm like, all right, well, it is what it is. Like, I don't feel like I can't get sunburned, but whatever. And she got some of the salve, the balm. Mm-hmm. She rubbed it across my forehead and around my and like over my nose and stuff. And about 2 days later, I was straight.
Dang.
Like a day later, I was straight. I was super straight.
I gotta try that. I've always had to use coconut oil, which coconut oil works really, really well. But
yeah,
I'll try.
I put it on. She was like, "What?" She told me, "What is it gonna hurt?" And I'm like, "What you mean? What is it gonna hurt? Like, it's gonna either get worse, or it's gonna get better." And I don't want a chance to get worse because this is my first time having it. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure people have had it way, way worse than I have, but I didn't know. I didn't know how long it's supposed to last or anything. And that was my first time ever using it for a sunburn.
All right. Now you know for sure.
Right.
I'll try it too, man. I appreciate you giving me the time. I talked to you even longer than I expected. It's great talking to you. Last question I have for you that I ask everybody is, throughout your whole journey, whether it's business related or football related or even personal life stuff, is there anything looking back, any regrets or anything you would tell your younger self or anything you'd change, or would you leave it all the same?
Considering I probably would have went in the first round to probably a trash ass team. At one point I did regret what I did in college. I did. But as I got older, I felt like I shouldn't regret that because I did that to stand up for myself and for people like me that look like me, you know what I'm saying? And I did that, you know, just because my that reaction came from something that I learned from my grandma a long time ago. And my grandma always ever told me, like, if this is ever said to you, there is no in between and there's no arguing about that. We're gonna have to settle this a different way. You know what I'm saying? And out of the little small town of Perry where I grew up at, it happened all the time.
Yeah.
I've been called some really horrible and crazy things in my own hometown during football games, walking down the street, whatever. Like, it's just a country place. 8,000 people total, maybe. And I was just raised to not let that slide.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that that was the one thing out of everything he could have said, F you, whatever, you know, we kicked your ass, whatever. Out of everything you could have said to like rub it in, you chose that one thing. So, you know, that was my first reaction because that's the only reaction I knew.
Yeah. I mean,
so
yeah.
I was saying if I regretted anything, it would have been that. But now, like, as a man, as, you know, someone that's, you know, 34 years old, no, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, you stood up for yourself. And I think long term, you didn't go to a trash organization.
Right.
Could have just completely made you a way better football player just from that extra chip on your shoulder. Could have
right.
Put you all the way through.
A lot of that situation in itself, you know, kind of set up all of the things that happen later on in the future, you know, from going undrafted to winning 3 Super Bowls, you know, that I probably would have, if everything was reversed and I were in the first line, I probably never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So,
could have been stuck with the Falcons.
Probably would have something like the Jets or something, you know, or,
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I know you have a son that plays football. Any advice for him or kids like him that are watching or listening that want to grow up to be a football player?
Yeah, man. I always tell my son, man, just stay disciplined. Never always be a leader. Never let anyone talk you into something that you don't want to do or that you shouldn't do. Always stand up for yourself. I tell them so many different things from what I've learned from growing up. I tell them all that stuff, and I tell them that daily. Every day, I talk to them, and I say, hey, man, what's up? How was school? You got homework? Let's knock that on out. Come chill with me. And then, you know, we go from there, and, you know, after that, and then he run away, go play his games. I'm actually at his room right now because they downstairs cleaning.
I figured that wasn't your basketball goal behind you.
Yeah, he see my dog be out here hooping, man. He play everything, though.
Does he get the same thing you got when you were a kid? Like, oh, you're going to be as good as your dad?
Yeah, he get that. He get that a lot. But he at 11 years old versus me at 11 years old, he's a lot more polished.
Okay.
He's a lot better than I was at 11 years old. He has an unimaginable number of medals, rings, trophies, just from, you know, football and flag and sevens and stuff like that. He got some dope stuff here. But he's a man, though, you know, and I repeatedly tell him, like, oh, bro, man, you're a leader. You got to always lead by example, you know, and I tell him that stuff. And I'm like, man, one thing I do tell him a lot, I say, LB, don't ever make impulse decisions. Always think about what you're going to do before you decide to do it. If you get pissed off or if you get mad and you think, I want to snap, always take a minute, take a deep breath, and just think about what's going to be coming out of you snapping. Either going to be one, you're going to get beat up. Two, you're going to beat the kid up. And then after that, you're going to get in trouble. You know, and this, that, and the other. And these are all like domino effects of, you know, one decision. And so I let him know that. And he's a smart kid. He understands. He makes all A's in school and stuff. So
I was like, he's got a bright future. It seems like you're guiding him the right way. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I got. Last thing, where can the people find you? Where can they find LG's Feel Good? Whatever else you want to plug.
People can find me at L_Blunt on Instagram. And if you want LG's Feel Good, the best CBD product in the business, you can always go to lgsfeelgood.com and, you know, get your rollerball, get your salve, get your patches, get your sleep gummies, get your anxiety drops, any of that stuff. If you need it, we got it. It's the best CBD product on the market, hands down.
There it is. You heard it. I'm gonna go buy it right now. Actually, try it out for the psoriasis, try it out for the sleeping. That's all I got for you, man. Thanks again for coming on. It was great talking to you.
I appreciate it, baby, man. I'm sorry it was so tough to get a hold of you, man. I'll be moving around, bro. It's the longest I've sat down in one place. I don't know how long this has been, but this is the longest I've sat down in one place in a minute. So I'll be on the go. I'll be on the move. So
I'm right there with you, man. I get antsy. I got to fidget with something. Maybe it's something to do with being born on December the 5th, but I can't stay
still. Right. I can't stay still, man. Persistence is the key, man. Stay that way, bro. Stay that way.
All right. I appreciate you, man. All right. That's a show.